Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Good morning. Is it just me? Football Friday. Mark Schlereth alongside Troy Rank. This is how we start it off every Friday morning. Ah, just so good. Right? Just puts a smile on your face. Getting ready for preseason game number two. The Culture Club taking it right in this Saturday evening. Ah, go ahead, man. You know what? Let this thing breathe. You come and go. You come and go. Kick it off here on a Football Friday. Is it just me, Football Friday? Mark Schlereth sitting alongside Troy Rank as Mike Evans, my partner, continues to recover from open heart surgery. I texted back and forth with him last night. He said he's doing really well. We'll see about next week when he comes in, when he decides to grace us with his presence. You know, I mean, there's part of me that says Mike's kind of milking this thing, but then it's open heart surgery and you kind of feel bad about saying that, but he's kind of milking this thing. So we'll see if he can come in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever it is. You know, he just kind of makes his own schedule now, Troy. But Troy Rank from Denver 7, Broncos insider, joins the program right now. Also covered the Rockies for two decades. Troy, how are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. And you know why? Because traffic finally took pity on me. It was like the Red Sea had parted from Longmont to the Denver Tech Center.
You find there to be traffic at, what time do you leave your house? 4 something?
4:45.
And you run, is it like construction traffic?
No, once you get to basically Thornton, traffic develops. Depending on the pattern, it can be gnarly.
Really?
Yes. I grew up in Colorado. I used to be able, I went to see you. You could get from Pueblo. I grew up in Pueblo. You could get from Pueblo to Boulder in like 1 hour 45, 2 hours. Now, outside of, I would say midnight to 4 a.m. and sometimes during the week from like 9 to 11 in the morning, not Fridays, there's traffic.
Really?
There's just way more people here.
Yeah, well, that much is, there's no question. There's a ton more people here because there is traffic. But I get from my garage, like pulling out of my garage to being in the parking lot here. If I don't hit a light, there's 1, 2, I think 3, 4 lights. If they are all green, it takes me like 10 minutes. If they're like 1 or 2 that are red, or it takes me like 12 minutes. From pulling out of my garage.
Dang. Well, the other thing.
This good living is what that is.
The other reason I'm in a good mood, I heard The Cure is Friday. I'm in love.
Yes, you can't go wrong with the, you can't go wrong with The Cure on a Friday.
Yeah. And so it's good. It just feels like everything's in sync, which means at some point an anvil is going to drop on my head.
Right. Well, exactly. You know what? That's got to be what the Rockies feel like right now on Is It Just Me Friday, Football Friday, because the Rockies just seem to be in sync. I don't know if you got to watch that game last night, but 9th inning. I mean, they're down 2-3. Find a way to scratch out 3 runs in that inning, go up 5-3, then Wade Davis makes it interesting by being pretty much behind every single hitter. Except I think he struck out 1 guy in 3 straight pitches, 3 straight curveballs, which were absolutely filthy. But, the Rockies, you know, like you talk about it, they should be the Colorado, Cockroaches, because they just flat out, you cannot step on them. They will survive. I mean, this is a resilient baseball club that just continues to find a way to scrap out victories against really good baseball teams. It's impressive.
Well, look who's doing it though, too, Mark. You're talking about Ryan McMahon has had 3 of the biggest at bats of his life in the span of like 5 days. And David Dahl last night. Now, David Dahl is extremely talented. His issue's been injuries. I mean, there's a reason they took him in the first round. He's, for me, is a Steve Finley type player, when Finley had a really nice career. And he's that kind of player. He's just never been healthy. Last night, that at bat, with, you know, they're pitching him away, a changeup away, gets into an account, stays over the baseball and smokes it down the left side, little oppo action.
Uh-huh.
That's a mature at bat in a situation where he had a slow heartbeat. Cause the tendency when you see a changeup as a young guy in that situation is to what? Roll it over.
Right.
4-3, out of the inning. Oh, as a young kid, tough at bat. He stayed back on that pitch. I mean, that was an impressive at bat. And McMahon strung together numerous impressive at bats. And that's how your team usually gets to the finish line. It's guys you either weren't counting on, maybe in the case of McMahon, or a guy like Dahl starting to step into the spotlight. You can see a future for Dahl. Honestly, again, going forward, I would look to put him in center field and move Blackman to a corner.
Yeah.
If you bring Cargo back or whatever you decide to do with Cargo, because that's another guy. Cargo has had a sneaky good year.
Right.
A sneaky good year. So credit to the Rockies, because they've had every reason to go away and been punched in the face multiple times, and they remind me of that Rocky, the original Rocky, just getting just lambasted, ears boxed, and they're just standing in front of you, keep taking punches, and all of a sudden they just start throwing them.
Yeah, in regards to David Dahl, because interesting, you know, a lot of times baseball players or a lot of times athletes, you know, throw away around compliments to other athletes, kind of like manhole covers. Yeah, the guy's pretty good. You know, they downplay it a little bit. So my son was in the minor league somewhere and faced David Dahl. They played a three-game series early. And then I come out to wherever he's at, and I'm going to go hang out for a while. And he's like, man, this kid the Rockies have, like, this kid, would you watch, Daddy? This kid is five-tool. He goes, he is one of the best minor league baseball players I have watched play. And there is no question that he's got that kind of talent. You know, I mean, he can hit for power. He can hit for average. He can run. He can play defense. The kid is an athlete and he's a great baseball player if the kid can stay healthy, which has been, you know, proven to be his bugaboo. But he had that, what do you have? A homer yesterday. He had a double. He had that at bat. I mean, it was impressive. It was amazing. And you're right. It's McMahon who's done it. It is David Dahl who's done it. You know, that they did it yesterday. Story beats out, what was it, the ninth inning where he beats out that,
Dansby Swanson an error. I mean, he just briefly bobbles it. And Trevor Story can run. You're talking about five-tool?
Yeah.
He's been a five-tool guy this year. Now, I don't know if that's who his profile will be going forward, but Story's going to end up with 30 home runs, 20 to 25 stolen bases. He's hitting right at 290 now. I mean, driving in runs, and he's playing gold glove caliber defense. I mean, if you start the conversation of best players in the National League, he's going to be in that conversation for me in the top 10 this season. Now, I'm not saying that's who he is for his career, but this season, given the position he plays, he's cut down on strikeouts by about 33%, and he's running. Last year, I think he had 7-10 bags. This year, he's going to get to 20 stolen bases.
Yeah. I think the big thing for me with him is obviously the maturity at the dish. Like, when you show that kind of maturity, you become, like, you're still hitting homers. You're still hitting for power. But you eliminate the strikeouts, as you mentioned, 33%. He's down 33% on that.
From May 1st.
Okay.
End of April, of May, so the first 2 months of the season, he was still striking out at that 45% clip that he was at last year. Where you're like, you can't hit. He hit 238, 239 last year. And it was only because the ball wasn't in play. Now all of a sudden the ball's in play. He's almost a 300 hitter.
Yeah. And it's been impressive to watch how he's matured at the dish, how he's been more selective and less free swinging, kind of understanding what you know, like being able to discern the difference between strike and ball, but being able to discern the difference between a strike you can hit and a strike that you need to let go. You know what I'm saying? That to me has been the big difference for Trevor Story. It's been fun to watch, and the Rockies continue to just grind out victories against really good opponents. Very exciting. I'm telling you what. The division championship, can they win? I don't know, but it's going to be fun to watch how they do it. Hey, guys, does Mr. John Elway, my former teammate, have some explaining to do? We'll talk about that next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Hey, welcome back in. Schlereth and Evans. Brian on the text line. Brian, yes, yes, yes. Lord have mercy. RamosLaw.com, text line 303-713-1043. Is it just me? Football Friday. You got a question. You got a thought to get off your chest. Feel free to hit us up right there. Brian, quit hitting the text line. Lord have mercy. Dude, calm down. Relax. Speaking of relaxing, Elway on the defensive, maybe a little bit, maybe not. Maybe Elway doesn't care. I mean, that's kind of how John is, like, you know, the grand poobah of all things football, asked yesterday about Colin Kaepernick and the potential of Colin Kaepernick coming to work for the Denver Broncos if, in fact, they are going in that direction to bring in a veteran quarterback. Here's what Elway had to say about that.
Well, you know what, and I said this a while ago, and, you know, Colin had his chance to be here. We offered him a contract. He didn't take it. So, you know, and as I said at my deposition, and I don't know if I'm legally able to say this, but, he's had his chance to be here. He passed it.
Had his chance to be here. He passed it. You know, I read a bunch of stuff on the internet yesterday, and the internet, you know how the internet is. They just go crazy, right? It's collusion, and it's this, and it's that. But to have a real honest conversation about Colin Kaepernick, which you can't, because both sides, I think there are the, you know, he's a piece of trash type of side, and then there's he is completely being, you know, he's a complete victim, and you know, so you have all these varying opinions. Like, do I think that there is some type of collusion that has gone on within the league? I would say, yeah, but probably, you know, I mean, I think most signs point to that. I also know that, you know, Colin Kaepernick in this profession that's hung its hat on patriotism and hung its hat on, you know, kind of those American values, if you will, he's bad for business. And I also know that Colin Kaepernick, based upon his skill set, and a lot of people will look at stats, so, well, he's an 88 QBR and, you know, 70 touchdowns versus 30 interceptions. I know this. He is not a traditional, or cannot function properly in a traditional passing offense or a traditional quarterbacking offense. So there's a lot of issues there, but just your initial, I'm sure you were in that scrum, that media scrum that asked those questions. Your initial takeaway about John and his answer.
Well, I was on the beat for the Denver Post when this all played out with Colin Kaepernick. So context is important here. This was after the Super Bowl season. Peyton Manning has retired. The Broncos are trying to find a long-term solution at quarterback, or at least more of a battle for the starting position beyond Mark Sanchez, Trevor Siemian. They meet with Colin Kaepernick twice. Colin Kaepernick, at that point, he's under contract with the San Francisco 49ers. He's guaranteed $11.9 million, Mark. They asked him, the Broncos, and this is where context is important, when they said they offered him a contract. They did. They said, we want you to play here for $7 million. We see that as your value. And they remember, at that time, trying to sign Von Miller long-term. So there was a cap number they were trying to manage. Whether right. You say, well, Kaepernick's worth more than seven. I don't disagree with you in that season, but they were trying to get him at $7 million because they're trying to get Von signed, mm-hmm. and the fact that that's where they assigned his value. Kaepernick is like, I'm not going to walk away from $5 million guaranteed money. So they go, okay, what about restructure and or go back to San Francisco and say, we'll give you a better, they're going to give them a better draft pick if San Francisco absorbed the $5 million. San Francisco eats a portion of the contract, mm-hmm. gets a better pick from Denver, a player. It was going to be a pick. They had agreed upon that wasn't going to be the issue. The pick could have got worked out. And San Francisco says, no, we're not going to pay any of it. So Denver walks away from the deal, drafts Paxton Lynch. End of story. So it became Lynch, Siemian, and Mark Sanchez competing for the starting job, eventually won by Trevor Siemian.
Right.
But that is the context of it. And there is this part. Remember, this is pre-anthem. The first time Colin Kaepernick kneeled was at Denver in the preseason.
Of that year, 2016.
Yeah, so this all happened in, you know, right leading up to the draft. So I want to say April.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to the draft, and then he first kneeled in. It was the joint practice. It's very similar to this. The Niners were in town, and that preseason game was the first time he kneeled. So this wasn't related to the kneeling in terms of the contract they offered. That hadn't existed yet. That hadn't happened. They just assigned a number to him, said $7 million. he understandably said, I'm not walking away. Even if it's incentives he could get back, claw back, he's like, I'm not walking away from $5 million guaranteed extra $5 million. And he didn't. They moved on. And I think that is the one thing to be important to understand. Whether nationally it wants to be portrayed, well, it's a collusion. Understand with John Elway, there's times with guys who walk away from him, never get back into the inner circle. They felt like they made an honest effort to get him.
Right.
He didn't really reciprocate, so they moved on.
Here is what you hear on, you know, Pro Football Talk and everywhere else. The reason that some people will say that doesn't hold water is because Brock Osweiler
right.
was shunned. Brock Osweiler was offered $16 million a year. He went to Houston for $18 million, and basically Elway was irritated, and there were some unkind things said on the way out. And then when Brock Osweiler finally got cut or traded to Cleveland and Cleveland released him, and he came back here on a minimum wage deal. And, you know, and that was quote unquote water under the bridge.
But do you think Kaepernick would do that? He wasn't willing to do that
right.
last year. I don't know where he is in his contract now.
This is the thing about Colin Kaepernick is he's kind of an enigma in that I don't know what he doesn't speak. As far as I know, I haven't heard him come out and say, this is where I am in my life. This is what I want.
Right.
This is kind of what I'm willing to accept. I'm willing to accept being a not competing for a starting job. This is what the things that I know about the NFL. In regards to Colin Kaepernick, like Brock Osweiler, you can argue this. I mean, he obviously didn't play very well, and he didn't play very well in Houston either. But Brock Osweiler can operate a traditional offense at what level? Probably not a great level, but at least he can operate it. Colin Kaepernick's success comes in a non-traditional spread. Got to have a quarterback that can run and do those things. Teams are hesitant to say, this is our starting offense and what we run, but here's what we have to do for our backup quarterback. We've got to create a completely different offense that 10 other people need to learn. And like the Broncos have just gone through this with Paxton Lynch, and it's been an abject disaster. So they don't want to go back through that once again. So that's one issue that you get. The other issue, I know how this league operates. They've just gone through a season where they just hired Case Keenum. He's their starting quarterback. And what's the only question ever asked to Vance Joseph? What about the competition with your backup quarterback? Like when your backup quarterback is getting the headlines and you have to answer those questions, Vance Joseph had been irritable about having to answer that question. We've got a starting, like the other night, we've got a starting quarterback. There is no quarterback controversy here. Like when your backup, like you'll put up with an issue in this league. You'll put up with a guy that creates controversy or a guy that creates questions as long as his gift is supreme, as long as his talent trumps that stuff. As soon as your issue trumps your talent, nobody wants you. And especially at the backup quarterback position. So like I look at this as kind of a non-factor and a non-issue. Elway answered it honestly. We tried to make him an offer, and we tried to trade for him. It didn't work out. You know, I've moved on. And I think most of it has to do, like, I think the majority of it has to do with the quarterback skill set, where they are as an offense, and not wanting to change those things. So, you know, I'll give John Elway the benefit of the doubt. I believe him. I'll take him at his word. I believe him, and I believe the Broncos. You know, that's where I am right now. Two is nice, but you know what? Three is a really good time. And I'll tell you why next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning!
Morning!
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are gonna get weird.
You're gonna eat like me, and you're gonna crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stuff.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
This ball lined to left. This will score two. McMahon coming home. And he'll score easily. David Dahl, what a night. Three ribbies for Dahl, and the Rockies have a 5-3 ninth inning lead in Atlanta.
From AT&T Sportsnet, there it is, the Colorado Rockies. I'm telling you what, man, the Colorado Rockies just continue to do what they have to do to win baseball games. And it's the young guys, as you mentioned earlier in the program, the young guys with some big time at bats. You had, right there, David Dahl getting a big time hit. So, the Rockies end up winning that game 5-2. I mean, I tell you what, Troy, they just keep finding a way to win that, which is, I mean, great thing. Resilient, man. They are a resilient group right now.
And to do it on the road. I mean, again, they've continued to keep pace on the road. You know, they could end up winning 44 games on the road. That's amazing when you consider the most they've ever won in a season is 41 last year. So to be able to win, remember Atlanta 9-1, their last 10 at home. You know, the Astros were struggling and had lost 8 straight or 7 straight.
Right, they lost it was nine straight when the first night when they beat Verlander, when the Rockies beat Verlander, and
right.
Then obviously they won that last game in blowout fashion, but they did take a split from Houston.
So you take a team that's 1-9 over their last 10 home games in Houston, you get a split, you go to Atlanta, they're 9-1 their last 10, and they're up on you going up late. I mean,
the
right
ninth inning, you ended up scoring 3 in the ninth.
Yeah, I mean, DJ strung together in a bat. I mean, guys just pass the baton. When they have been really good on the road and they've been clutch, guys take where they hit the ball where it's pitched. But David Dahl, that at bat, again, a changeup away in that situation can lead to a rollover swing. He stayed over the baseball, smokes it to left. Really mature at bat in that situation for a guy who clearly wasn't, the moment wasn't too big for him. And that's what, remember, in 07 when they got through, the key was Ubaldo Jimenez and Franklin Morales. Two young kids kind of didn't know better. And I'm not saying these two are that, but sometimes in your roster, you need guys to contribute if you're going to do something special that you weren't expecting. And McMahon's been an unlikely star.
Right.
And David Dahl is a star. He's just finally healthy.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Next in the Morning Brew.
Happy to be here. You know, excited. You know, trying to work out some things.
That is Dez Bryant trying to work out some things with the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland Browns, like, they're an intriguing. I know you've been watching Hard Knocks. I haven't watched the last episode of Hard Knocks, but they're an intriguing story. I think they're, from just a pure talent standpoint, look at them and watching them play this preseason, they certainly look like they've upped the talent quotient there. Dez Bryant, do you think that's a good fit for the Cleveland Browns?
I don't. I think he's going to be unhappy, and the losing will wear on him. I will say this. If they get off to a decent start, I think he'll be fine. Dez Bryant in a losing situation, I'm not sure that might be a little bit more volatile a mix than they need. But he's talented, and in the right role, he could help. Tyrod Taylor doesn't turn the ball over. That's why I think Cleveland's going to win some games this year early.
Right.
And eventually, Baker Mayfield's probably going to take over. But Tyrod Taylor, he doesn't take many chances, and he takes care of the ball. I mean, that's who he is as a quarterback.
Do you think that we're ever going to see Josh Gordon play again? Josh Gordon is interesting to me because the guy is an absolute freak show. Athletically, he's a freak show. And he can, he can flat play, but he went home because of mental issues, just like having a tough time, you know, with integrating himself back into football.
They explained it on Hard Knocks. Part of it was the camp. The structure of camp was so much and so overwhelming. Maybe he needed like the regular season, like the Tuesday day off, the 4 minute instead of all day, every day, which it seems kind of counterintuitive to me, but whatever. There's talk that like just when they break camp, like he should show back up. But this signing of Dez Bryant makes me think that's less likely that he's going to show up anytime soon.
Yeah. It's just an interesting situation. Next in the Morning Brew.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other.
From The Hangover, right?
Yeah, from The Hangover. I tell you, by the way, I love it. But there's a story out right now about Brady and Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. And, you know, the whole deal was Brady doesn't like Garoppolo and he didn't let Garoppolo go to his trainer, Alex Guerrero, and demanded that Garoppolo be traded because he knew that Bill Belichick was going to, you know, usurp Brady with Garoppolo and they hate each other. Apparently they're all on a text, like a group text, the three of those guys, they text all the time, sending funnies. I suppose, right? Is that what you do? You send like little jokes and lighthearted moments. And anyhow, that apparently they're all three very good friends, and they have their own little group chat on a text thing. Wouldn't you like to be kind of a, wouldn't you like to be part of that group chat? Like, what do you think those three guys talk about?
Yeah.
But like, I mean, Brady and, man, my handsomeness is incredible. Hey, me too, Tom. My handsomeness is great. Yeah.
Diet, nutrition.
Right. I just made this incredible avocado dish you guys must try, right?
Yeah, Tom Brady really looked like he missed that all those off-season workouts, by the way, last night, as he just riddled the Eagles. Guy's like 59 years old and just best player on the field.
Oh, man. He threw a ball, like a deep, I don't know if it was a deep cross or whatever, but hit Hogan right between the one and the five, and Hogan dropped it. And, I mean, he drops back, he gets pressure, he manipulates the pocket, he climbs the pocket, you know, he finds his receiver crossing the middle of the field, just throws an absolute dart to him, and bounces off his chest plate. Yeah, Brady's incredible, man. He's just incredible. Just incredible. I'm sure they were talking about hair product too. Don't you think? A little bit of hair product, like you. Makeup kit and your coach makeup bag.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
No,
I own it.
No,
I own it.
It's not a bad thing. Next in the Morning Brew.
I loved him as a player because of concentration level wise, you get more out of it. You work harder. You're competing during practice a little bit more because it can get a little bit old against your own guys. So plus it's a different defense and different coverages. And so I like him a lot. And, I think it's been the last couple of days.
Last couple of days, John Elway talking about the joint practices with the Chicago Bears that they had the last 2 days out there at Dove Valley. Your takeaway from those joint practices, how did you feel from a competitive standpoint what the Broncos went through?
I like what I saw yesterday much more than the first day. A little more intensity, a little more physicality, more sense of urgency. Tim Patrick got into it with the defensive back from the Bears, and then he blew this dude up in special teams drills, and the teammates were around him cheering. Like there were a couple moments out there. Like we keep waiting. Like, is there going to be a moment like where this team kind of bows up and doesn't take it anymore? And I saw that. I mean, again, it's Tim Patrick, and he may or may not be their fifth or sixth receiver, but there was some intensity there. Vance Joseph then Patrick got into it with one of the Bears coaches briefly during a drill, and Joseph ran over and told him to be quiet. But I just liked it. It felt like a football practice that I was expected the first day. Guys were a little irritated by each other.
Mm-hmm.
Still no one covered the tight end. There were guys, I think, jumping over that wall at Dove Valley off the street.
Right.
Off of Rappo just jumping into routes in street clothes.
Right. It was just, it was like Adrian Claiborne pass rushing against the Dallas Cowboys last year at their backup left tackle. People were just drawing straws on the sideline to rush that guy. By the way, Adrian Claiborne, now he's with the New England Patriots. He hasn't been blocked. I've watched him play two games. He hasn't been blocked yet. Like, he wasn't blocked at all in that game against the Eagles last night either. It's just as...
Living right?
He is living. That's just good, clean living. Hey, guys. Speaking of good, clean living in the Denver Broncos, it's time for the Broncos just to rip off the Band-Aid. That's next.
Janovich, the fullback, a fake. Lynch, off three chases. And look out, it's intercepted. It's picked off. Bowman on the ground, and look what he found. How about that? First interception by the Raiders this season. And it comes in the end zone.
That low light brought to you by us. That is Paxton Lynch giving the Raiders the first interception of the season, as you heard right there. Monday morning quarterback's pretty respected, on SI, right? A lot of people read the Monday morning quarterback. Just thumbing through things this morning as I was prepping for the show, and this came up. Christian Hackenberg and Paxton Lynch basically joined at the hip. Not a good look. Both of them complete and total busts to this point. And essentially talking about the value of each of these. Hackenberg has not taken a regular season snap. He was drafted in the same draft class in the second round, 51st overall, I believe, to the New York Jets. Tuesday, he ended up signing with the Philadelphia Eagles. Tuesday, he threw two interceptions. He was reportedly supposed to get a few snaps last night. Nick Foles gets hurt, and they just decide to go with Nate Sudfeld and Joe Callahan. Callahan Otto. Right? Tommy Boy reference right there. So they don't even put, I mean, they don't even put Hackenberg in. And then obviously we know what's gone on with Lynch here. Disappointing performance against the Vikings, 6 of 11 for 24 yards, an interception, no touchdowns, passer rating of 22.2. He's been beaten out by a seventh rounder once again, three straight years in a row where he's been beaten out by a seventh rounder. And the fans love him so much, they started a GoFundMe page to get rid of him. I mean, that's like the fans in Denver, Colorado, you gotta love Colorado and you gotta love our fans. Our fans are so disgusted and sick of the first rounder who apparently can't play that they started a GoFundMe page to ease some of the pain of the $4.5 million cap hit that would happen if, the Broncos in fact were to release Paxton Lynch. I don't know how much money is on that campaign right now. Anybody know?
Yeah, I doubt it's, I mean, if it's over like $150, I'd be surprised. It's more of a spoof on anything, but
right.
it is a reflection of where they are with Paxton Lynch at this point. I've said this for, you know, a couple of weeks now that if you can't see the end of Paxton Lynch, if this isn't the end of Paxton Lynch's career in Denver, you can see it from here. I can't imagine he's going to be on the roster on opening day. And the only thing that would change my opinion on that is if the, you know, something you wouldn't want to see, which is an injury to Chad Kelly. I still see the most likely scenario, Stink, is the Broncos releasing Paxton Lynch and getting a veteran quarterback as a backup with Chad Kelly as a number three and with a guy they think has a future in the organization, but they don't think it'd be ready to play right away if, you know, Case Keenum went down. Remember this about Chad Kelly. He has played one football game in 650 days. So this idea, while I get the excitement around him and he looked great against the Vikings. He had a mistake, but he looked great for the most part, especially in context with his time off. Do you think he's ready if he had to go in against the Seahawks in the second half? I mean,
no.
I just think that's a big ask for a guy who hasn't basically played in almost 2 years. So my most likely scenario is after this game, they're going to reassess. And Elway said he's certainly keeping an open mind of that, hasn't ruled it out. They like what they see from Chad Kelly, but they say, you know what? It would feel a lot better if we just had a veteran security blanket around here, even if it's for a month or two. And then maybe you decide Kelly's ready during the regular season.
Right.
But I don't see Lynch as being involved in that at all. I think the days with Lynch are over, that he'll be gone at the end of training camp.
You know, if you're holding out hope that maybe he has a good game and maybe his value ticks up a little bit and somebody's going to give you a conditional seventh round pick, I mean, when the Monday morning quarterback is basically linking he and Christian Hackenberg together and basically saying that, hey, guess what? I mean, these are just going to go down as two busts. Like, I don't know that your value is very good. And there comes a time when it's better to rip off the band-aid and get that guy out of your locker room than continuing to let him show up. I don't know at what point that time comes. Maybe it's right after this game. I don't know that you're going to get any value for him. And there's part of me that almost feels like you're just waiting around to be cut. Like, put me out of my misery so I can either go somewhere else or I can just go back to my hometown and fish. Like, I've seen that with guys. I've seen guys that basically have given up on their careers. Like, they get to the point where they're overwhelmed, where they come to a realization for whatever the reason is, I'm not physically gifted enough, I don't understand it, I can't process quickly enough, and I think that's the bigger issue is that, and processing, again, I always clarify this by saying, when I say you don't process quickly enough, it doesn't mean you're not smart. It doesn't mean you can't be successful in some other venue. But when you're talking about world-class athletes and making split-second decisions and putting the ball where the ball needs to be, and this goes beyond quarterback. I mean, you have to do that as an offensive lineman, as a defensive player, as a linebacker, as a DB. Like, you have to have an elite-level processor to be able to play this game at any, you know, at any a productive level, at any level, you've got to have a great processor, and you can get away without one in the college game. Like, you look at him, and you think about running a spread offense. You go, why could he do it in college? Well, you know, he's physically gifted, and in that system, in a smaller environment, you're basically saying, hey, we're going to run plays. We're going to run our eight plays, and we're going to run them at such a frequency that the defense never switches out of what they are in. And then I'm going to tell you as a coach to throw it wherever you're going to throw it. You've got one read. Throw the slant. You know, throw the quick out. All right? Throw the stick route. I mean, like, throw the fade. Like, that's, we're going to tell you what to do. And it's, you're looking at one dude and you're just throwing the ball and everybody's playing back in a zone because they're exhausted and they can't rotate guys in and they can't play multiple coverages because they don't have time because you never huddle. Like these are the quarterbacks that we're developing. And so it's really hard. You get enamored, like Elway got enamored with physical talent. And, you know, it's the other things. It's the intangible stuff that didn't show up. And so, you know, I've seen guys that came in with great hopes of making a roster and realize at some point during the course of preseason, like, I don't belong in the NFL. And you can just see them going, all right, I'm just waiting. I'm just going to be here until they cut me. Like, I'm not going to quit. I'm just waiting to get cut. Now, and I could be completely wrong on that take, but I just feel like Paxton Lynch is like overwhelmed at this point.
Yeah, I think he needs a fresh start. I believe he'll go somewhere and be a third stringer somewhere else. He doesn't profile as a backup. That's what hurts Paxton. He is one of those guys, to your point, Mark, if he's not a starter, is he on your team?
Mm-hmm.
Because backups are what? The guy that just lives the kind of that nerdy quarterback, lives in the playbook, always prepared every day, and he might work one day out of the year. But every day he goes to work as if he's going to play. That doesn't describe Paxton Lynch. I'm not being unfair to, that's the reality.
Right.
That's, the other guys fit in that as well. It's not just him. He doesn't profile as a backup. So that's why I think he goes somewhere. He plays third string somewhere. Then he goes to camp next summer and he gets cut. And I think at that point his NFL career could be over without significant change on his part. I think next summer would be the end of his career, unless he does something to change the narrative in terms of who he is on and off the field.
Right. Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope he has a great career. He's got to change some things in how he approaches this profession. This is an adult world
right.
that you're living in. This is a grown-up profession.
And I will just tell you this. Here are the issues that you get into, and I have no idea, but the issues that you get into is if you don't have an elite level If you don't have elite level processing ability, I don't care how hard you work, Troy, you'll never be an elite player in this league. And you can be an elite player in college. I mean, you can be a Vernon Golston in college where you're only matching up against like talent twice a year, right? Like physical talent. So you can just dominate physically. But when you have to start processing and making decisions and you're playing against the best of the best, that's when you see all of a sudden a guy that is a great college prospect who can't play in the National Football League. And that's the problem that you get into. Hey, Broncos fans, you guys are nervous. I know. I see it on the text line. I see it on my Twitter feed. What you got to see tomorrow in the preseason game number 2 to ease your fears. I'll clear the air next.